May it please the court. I am Robert Jobe, and I am the petitioner, Ravinder Kaur. And as I was saying, the briefs in this case leave the distinct impression that the parties are evaluating the board's decision regarding the timeliness of Ms. Kaur's motion under two different legal standards. And I think this relates to the difference in the language between the statute and the regulations. Both INA 240C7 and its implementing regulation exempt motions to reopen relating to asylum and withholding claims from the normal numerical and time limits on motions to reopen. Both require new, previously unavailable evidence, material evidence. But the INA says that the motion must be based on changed country conditions arising in the country of nationality. And perhaps because changes in country conditions by definition arise in the country of nationality, the implementing regulation construes INA 240C7 slightly differently, and it requires a showing of changed circumstances arising in the country of nationality. So in the motion to reopen that Ms. Kaur filed, she invoked the plain language of the regulation, and she pointed to three changed circumstances that had arisen in India. That is, her husband's death in 2013, which she argued was material because it left her as a widow. And there's documentation in the record about widows being discriminated against and persecuted.
But second, you said in your brief and for it, you do not, as I understand it, argue that widows in India are a particular social group. Is that correct?
No, we don't make that argument to
so
this
what's
court.
I mean, I wish you'd make the argument, but you didn't make the argument. You also filed a reply brief. Is that right?
No, there was no reply in this case. It's relevant for a number of reasons, Your Honor. First and foremost, it certainly is going to go to the issue of internal relocation. But the threshold question in this case is, what's the timeliness, whether the motion was timely or not? And the death of Ms. Kaur's husband is material to this case because...
Mr. Jobe, I guess I have a question with what you said earlier. You said it goes towards the issue of relocation. How has Ms. Kaur shown that she cannot relocate within India?
Well, Your Honor, it's our view that the burden was not on her to do that. The burden in this case would have been on the government to establish that she could not safely relocate and that that she could safely relocate and that it would be reasonable to expect her to do so. The problem with the issue of internal relocation is the board never addressed the issue of past persecution. But before I come to that, let me just deal with this threshold question about timeliness.
Well, before you get to that, though, go ahead.
You know, if I can, because, you know, going back to Judge Brezon's question about the relevance of her husband's death. Well, it's her husband's death that led. It's her husband's death that led her in-laws to blame her for that death.
Okay,
and then to make these.
The relevance of her husband's death. I asked about whether you were arguing that widows were a particular social group, and if you were.
And I said no. And then you asked me why.
Not the death, but the treatment of widows in India in general.
No, we're not arguing that point. What I'm trying to establish here is that the death of the husband occurred in India. And it's material because it led directly to her in-laws blaming her for that death and the subsequent death threats that they made against Ms. Kaur.
All right. So tell me what, let's assume all that.
Yeah.
You're right about the time. Is the particular, or what is the basis, what is the nexus to a particular?
It's family, Your Honor, the direct family of Balwinder Singh.
Yes, but I've not seen that used.
Well, if I could just address that real quickly, and it goes back to judgment. The motion that we filed, it argues that Ms. Kaur suffered past persecution on account of her family relationship. That is, as the spouse of Balwinder Singh. But at that critical question was never addressed by the board. The evidence on the nexus for past persecution is overwhelming, Your Honor. I mean, if you look at let me just make three.
Ordinarily, when some, I mean, you may be right about the fact that they didn't address it, and we should. But ordinarily, when you say that you're being discriminated against because you're a member of a particular social group, it's because people in that social group are treated as a group, and persecuted as that group. And you're kind of arguing the opposite. You're arguing that she is being ostracized by this group, essentially, and treated. I mean, you're not saying that she was treated this way because this is the way members of her family are treated. That's the way I've always seen it used before.
No, it's not always used like that, Your Honor. You can imagine the case of an interfaith or intercaste marriage where the parents of a young woman who are against this interfaith or intercaste marriage attack that woman because they feel as if she's dishonored the family. Those kinds of cases occur all the time.
Yes, and, but for example, in that instance, it would either be religious persecution or the particular social group of her caste. It would not be because she's a member of the family.
No, oftentimes the argument there is family as well.
You haven't cited one in your briefs, a case that's done this.
Well, I don't know that there's a published case. The best example, there's a Seventh Circuit case called Johnson. I will give you the cite to that, Your Honor. But yeah, there's a Seventh Circuit case in which a woman was made a motion to reopen on the fact because of the fact that her family in India had arranged a marriage for her. It wasn't intercaste. It wasn't interfaith. She was just opposed to the marriage. And because she didn't want to go back and enter into that marriage, she was facing persecution at the hands of her own family. Seventh Circuit said, yes, of course, that's persecution on account of her family relationship. Just like in this particular case, Ms. Kaur, she didn't fulfill what the family regarded to be as her responsibilities as wife to Balwinder Singh. And because she betrayed the family by reporting his instances of domestic violence against her, they considered that to be a betrayal of the family, and they seek to now kill her because of that betrayal. But the evidence...
The board hasn't passed on this at all.
Pardon?
You say the board has not passed on this at all.
No, the problem here is that the board... It elided the two central questions. The first, if I can go back to timeliness again, the critical question on timeliness is what standard do we apply? We're arguing that the standard is we have to show that there are changed circumstances arising in the country of nationality. The board, however, it never quoted or even grappled with that regulation. Instead, it went to the language of the statute and said, well, these are personal changes, they're not changes in country conditions. That's because the statute itself talks about changes in country conditions, but the regulation implementing it is more broad. And if you look at the board's decision, they talk about changes in country conditions seven times. They never talk about changes, change circumstances arising in India. They don't actually apply the regulatory standard. And if you look at the government's brief, they do the same thing. 20 times, 20, they refer to changed country conditions. They never once refer to the actual standard, changed circumstances arising in India. The board did not apply the regulatory standard. This has to go back so that they can.
Right. Whether this is actually a particular... actually, it's discussed in the BIA. And it says, as well as establish the family ties may meet the requirements of a particular social group, but she's not introduced any evidence that others in her proposed social group, but family members of her husbands have been similarly mistreated. Instead, I understand you disagree with this, but now you can't tell me that they didn't address it. They did it some length.
No, they didn't address the nexus question in the context of past persecution. That's the first point. And on that, it's almost impossible to dispute that she was persecuted because of her family relationship and her failure to fulfill her obligations to the family. When Balwinder raped her, he specifically told her, "You cannot refuse me. You are my wife." When she didn't have female children, he beat her and said, "You're a bad wife for not giving me a son." And then when she reported the domestic violence that he had committed against her, her in-laws said to her essentially that she had betrayed the family. She said that Indian people don't disclose private matters and you shouldn't talk to the police about your marital problems. The issue in this case has been throughout, both in the past persecution context and in the context of future persecution, that she isn't fulfilling the role that the family sees as appropriate for her to fulfill. And the board never addressed that question in the context of past persecution. And so, Judge Mendoza, going back to your question on internal relocation, because past persecution will determine which side has the burden of proof with respect to internal relocation, we can't even address that question because the board, it didn't take the initial step of assessing whether there was past persecution on account of a protected ground. So we don't even know what side has the burden of proof.
Mr. Jobe, you've more than used your time, but could I ask you a quick question?
Yes, sure.
This all relates to the CAT claim.
Well, the CAT claim, Your Honor, it's our view that on that, the board simply didn't grapple with our arguments. And because they didn't really grapple with our arguments, the case has to go back for reconsideration just on that basis alone. And I apologize for taking this extra 2 minutes here.
Good afternoon, may it please the court. I'm Brooke Maurer for the respondent, U.S. Attorney General. There are two basic facets to this, is whether the petitioner managed to demonstrate changed country conditions, and then also if she managed to demonstrate a prima facie eligibility for relief. Here, contrary to what counsel had stated, I do believe that the board addressed the country conditions, both with regard to the regulation and to the INA. As the board noted, the petitioner, or I'll note first, like as far as past persecution goes, in 2009, petitioner had brought another motion to reopen where she had brought the particular social group of her husband's abuse and the violence that she had suffered on that. And the board in that finding determined that there was no past persecution. So this is not directly related to this, but there was a finding made a while back regarding this. To address the claims now, it appears that counsel...
Ms. Maurer, yes. What's the difference between the persecution that she is claiming now, which is not necessarily from the husband, but rather from her family?
Correct.
His family. And isn't there continuous documented evidence where that's the case, where the family themselves persecute a widow specifically?
Well, I don't believe in this. I believe in this case, there is one that it was just her statement where she stated, as the board noted, that they had threatened her. And if her group is family, she would be the only one in that family that apparently was attempted to be persecuted or like harmed.
Who has the burden?
Well, the government asserts that there has been no past persecution determination, and therefore she doesn't qualify for any, you know, rebuttal of a well-founded fear. She bears the burden of demonstrating that she does have a well-founded fear and that these family members are in fact seeking to persecute her based on a protected ground. And here the government, you know, asserts that the board is adequately held that there's insufficient record evidence to demonstrate that they were going to persecute her on that ground. And he also cannot impute considering what happened with her, with her husband, to impute what happened then once he died, that's a different form of persecution than what she fears from the in-laws. It's a very different form.
Well, it's a documented form of persecution, certainly by the State Department. These dowry killings that still continue.
Well, the record also belies the assertion that they would be harming her other family members, as her own daughter lived with the father and the grandparents with no harm that came to her, and like there's no harm that's come to anyone else in her family.
Argument, and the question is, but let's. because she's arguing that it's because of her family connection, but not because all, but it's because of her particular status in the family, rather than because the family as a group is all being persecuted. And the question is that a valid argument? Which is because of her family, but it's whether that qualifies as a social group argument. I don't know. It's an interesting argument. I don't know. And Mr. Job tells us there's a Seventh Circuit opinion that seems to be somewhat similar.
I'm unaware of that one, but I agree. I mean, I think the board did kind of address this, and they note that, yes, they are family members. But this appears to be a personal vendetta out of grievance from their son. I mean, there isn't.
It's not a personal vendetta. It's a vendetta that is based on her the structure of the family, if I understand it. That's the same. It's not just because they don't like me. It's because I was their son's wife, and they think I had certain role to play, and they think I didn't play it, all because I was a member of the family.
Well, and as the board also noted, is like looking at the daughter would also be, I guess, considered part of that family. And the fact
daughter,
that she,
but the daughter didn't do these, it wasn't the wife, and the daughter didn't misbehave as a wife in this sense. So I don't know if it's a valid argument, but it's an interesting argument, and you don't deal with it by saying it's a personal vendetta. It's not really personal.
Well, no, but not even addressing it in the personal, Your Honor. Like, if you look at what the daughter even stated in her own declaration when she said that the family even noted, well, you should be happy. Your father is dead. It's what you wanted, didn't it? But there's no harm that came to her. They knew that she was related to the family, and they knew that she was part of it. But it would kind of go to belying the fact that the family was actually persecuting her based on her own family membership. She lived there. She was able to come and go as she pleased. She left, and there no harm befell her.
Ms. I mean, Sorry.
Wait, repeat. Sorry, I got it.
I don't understand your argument very well. Here's to know that this was a changed condition that arose in India, and was somewhat connected with other conditions in India with regard to how widows are treated. So why is there a changed country
condition? Why is there not a changed country condition?
Why isn't there one?
Okay. Well, no, I mean, as far as like the, I mean, I think the board adequately addressed that the, I mean, there wasn't a qualitative change. I mean, that's a factual determination that the board made, and the record supports that.
I thought your argument was that it wasn't, that it's not a condition that arose in India and doesn't, that it's a personal condition, not a country condition, and doesn't count. That's not your argument.
No, I think the board made two arguments in there. They said they noted that the group that he's claiming. Repeat now. You know, the board, I'm sorry, I guess I'm just like crisscrossing with you, so I have like a delay.
Are you defending both of these decisions, both of these arguments?
Correct.
All right, but then you said no. So I'm asking you, as to the argument about whether this was a changed country condition that arose in India, why isn't it one?
Why? Well, as far as the treatment of women, or as far as the family member?
The combination of them. The fact that her husband died in India, and that his family in India was now after her, and that is connected to the way widows are being treated now. Why isn't that a changed country condition in the country of origin, India?
And if I could add to Judge Berzon's question, wasn't there a State Department records that as of 1998, 8,455 reported dowry deaths, 8,455 in 2014, that in 1998, there were 6,917. These were dowry deaths. So isn't that an increase that would be a change in circumstance? Added to that, the fact that cruelty by husbands or relatives have doubled from 49,170 in 2001 to 122,837 in 2014. Isn't that a change in circumstance?
Yes, there is. I mean, like, there, there's a numerical increase. And I think the government also addressed that in their brief, noting that, I mean, like at the same time these are happening, you've also got population changes in there. So like, if you're looking at a statistical analysis, I mean, the changes are not as stymieing and alarming as they're cited in there. If you cite that in 2014, there were an extra like 500 million people in comparison to the 1998 reports, a doubling in size isn't going to have the same statistical impact on than just stating a double number.
Well, let's assume, suppose it was just the same amount of, but there were still changes in India that she didn't, it's not anything she did. It's not like having a child.
But they still have to be material. I mean, like as the board, you know, adequately held when they went through, and they basically said is that, you know, even her personal change could happen to be there, but she hasn't shown that this was on account of a protected ground. Like her husband died, and the government is arguing that her group is not family members. It's not a group.
You're switching gears all the time. All right, let's just stick for the moment with the question of whether or not there was change country conditions that were not. And she did not trigger that work did occur in India, and that interacted with a situation in India, whether it's a new situation or an old situation, which has now become relevant to her that wasn't relevant to her before. That is how widows are treated in India. Whether that's changed or hasn't changed, she still wasn't a widow before. Now she's
correct.
A widow through no reason, no fault of her own. And she is in fact being threatened as a widow. And being threatened as a widow is something that happens in India, whether it's new or old. Why isn't that a changed India?
But they just argued that they weren't even arguing that being a widow was the particular social group that they were going for.
I know. That isn't what I said. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about whether the fact that she has had circumstances for her have changed because of in India, because her husband died in India, and her, the family is in India, and she hasn't done anything to trigger that happening. So now she is in a status in which in India is a problematic status, whether it's new or an old problematic status. I'm not saying it's a particular social group. I'm saying that the circumstances have changed as to her likelihood of being persecuted.
Yes, and even the board agreed. That would be a change in there, but it said even if there is this change in there, she hasn't demonstrated like the proper group or the proper like protected ground. There can be a change because we're going to go if she's a change in, it doesn't matter because she still has failed to demonstrate that she's prima facie eligible for the relief that she's seeking.
Your time is up. Is there anything else?
No, thank you. All right.
So, I'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. A few points. First, the government's claim that the board decided the past persecution issue in an earlier decision, it's false. It's a gross misrepresentation to the court of what happened in that earlier case. If you look at page 455, that becomes self-apparent. Secondly, the board never applied.
Yeah, I don't have 455 in front of me. Would you please tell me what it says and makes it?
What happened there, Your Honor, is the board addressed the allegations of domestic violence only in considering whether they were changed conditions in the country of removal. And they concluded that to the extent that they represent a change, they're changes in personal circumstances rather than changes in country conditions. Second, this goes back to this point again. This whole argument that the government just made was focused on general changes in country conditions. That's not the test. Under the regulations, we simply have to demonstrate changed circumstances arising in India. The Seventh Circuit case that I was referring to, Your Honor, it's called Joseph versus Holder. It's 579 F3rd 827, 2009 case. It involved a woman whose family back in India had arranged a marriage for her that she didn't want to enter into. And the issue was, again, whether or not there were changed circumstances. The government made, just as they're doing now, they said this doesn't show some general change in country conditions. Seventh Circuit said that's not the test. The test is, are there changed circumstances arising in the country of nationality? They said this is a changed circumstance arising in the in the country of nationality.
And our final landing place was that the board agrees with that, but doesn't agree that there was, in fact, a...
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I couldn't hear that.
Ms. Maurer's final landing place on that question, as I understand it, was to agree with you, to say that it could have been a changed circumstance, but that the there was no particular social group shown.
Well, the problem here is that they never addressed the question of past persecution. The evidence on with regard to past persecution with respect to nexus is overwhelming. If you agree with our theory that there can be intrafamilial persecution, the evidence is indisputable because, again, when her husband raped her, he said, "You have to go along with this because you're my wife." Statements like that are direct evidence. But because the board never addressed the issue of past persecution, they never addressed the nexus question. And this becomes directly relevant, again, to the question of whether she faces future persecution. The government is misrepresenting the law when they say that because the husband passed away, the presumption no longer applies. The attorney general recently issued a decision making that same point, but both in this case and in that subsequent case by the attorney general, they're ignoring the change in regulations. They're citing a case that interpreted regulations that preceded the current regulations, and they're ignoring an attorney general opinion from Attorney General Mukasey that said specifically it's not about the presumption, isn't the scope, isn't determined by the persecutors. It's determined by the basis of the claim. And it defines the basis of the claim as the nexus, the on account of. And the only time that the presumption would not apply to a claim of future persecution is if it's unrelated to the past persecution. That's what the regs say. The government knows that. They know that that case, NMA, has no application to this new regulatory scheme, and yet they continue to make that argument. Counsel, and it's flat out wrong.
It appears that the Federal Register, when a change was made, it specifically noted that the amended language is not intended to alter the holding of NMA. It said that, Counsel.
That's true. But it's a different, it's a more narrow reading of NMA, Your Honor, because in NMA, you had a situation where not only was the persecutor different from the past persecutor, but the nexus was completely different. In NMA, you had a guy who was first persecuted because of his anti-communist beliefs. That was the basis of his past persecution. His future persecution claim was a claim that he would be persecuted by the very group that he had in the past supported, and that he was going to be persecuted based on a completely different political opinion. And it's because of the combination of those two things that we lost that case. I litigated that NMA case. But when they finally codified NMA in the regulations, they were crystal clear that they were taking a narrower reading of NMA than the government would have you believe. And that's made clear by Attorney General Mukasey's opinion in matter of AT. He addressed that very question, and he said that in the new regulations, the scope of the presumption is determined by the basis of the original claim, and he interpreted that clause, basis of the original claim, as meaning the protected ground, not the persecutor.
Okay, I'm looking at the Joseph case. Whether it in fact mirrors the interpretation of family as a social group that you're arguing for, and I'm not seeing it, but maybe I'm missing it. Is there some place where it does that?
I can't give you a direct citation to that, Your Honor, a paid citation, but I do
raise, but I don't think that's what we want.
Well, it's the holding of the case is they go on to say the plain language of the regulation does not restrict the concept of changed circumstances to some kind of.
But that doesn't deal with what I was asking you.
But it's implicit in that at a minimum, Your Honor, because they're saying.
We're just back to the question of whether there were changed circumstances. Okay, your time is well up. Thank you very much. Thank you,
Your Honor.
The case of Power versus Barr is submitted, and we will take a short break. 10 minutes, please. Thank you.